Christ's glory, His divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. Loving salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. The love of our lives, the wind beneath our wings, the beat of our hearts, the rhythm of the universe and the current that keeps it in motion alive to the minutest atom. Beloved and most beautiful Bhagwan, you are all that matters and ever will. To your glory, with all our love and humility, we bow over and over again. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. You're tuned to our Asia stream coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna, and I thank you very much for staying with us on this lovely Thursday morning, March the 26th, 2015. The time in the ashram right now is almost 40 minutes past 9 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. Current weather conditions in Prashanthi Nilayam, well, all I can say that along with the rest of the Indian peninsula, we are warming up, with daytime highs in the late 30s, overnight lows in the 20s. Today, we will go up to 36 degrees Celsius, and overnight, we might experience something close to 22 Celsius, which is pretty reasonable. The air is clear and crisp and a tad dry, I would say. Staying hydrated is very important these days, and you can see devotees carrying their water bottles and umbrellas around the ashram. Along with the rising mercury, we thought today was a very good day to raise the temperature of the discussion on Morning Glory. To talk about a very hot topic of frequent discussion among some, we have with us in the studio Professor Anant Raman of the Sai University's Department of Business Management. Sai Ram, Professor Anant Raman, and welcome to Morning Glory, sir.
Thank you.
So now, before I disclose the theme of our discussion, may I, with your permission, sir, play a 4-minute clip from a speech you delivered in the Sai Kulwant Hall during last Navratri on September the 30th, 2014. So, dear listeners, please have a listen.
Devoid of his overwhelming physical presence these 3 years, somehow, somewhere, many of us seem to have become lesser followers. One of the frequent questions I was being asked these last 3 years, particularly people coming from abroad, is this: why has Prashanthi Nilayam become devoid of love? Why are people here less caring? Why does this have to happen in a place which was once a citadel of love? I necessarily had to give political answers to these questions in the past. But my honest answer should have been, I do not know why. Swami used to tell the Chinnakatha of a boy who accidentally picked up a precious gem, bright and round, sparkling all around. Not knowing its value, he was using it as a marble to roll it on the ground and play with his friends. One day a merchant who happened to pass by realized its value and offered rupees 50 to his mother in exchange. The mother refused, as she now felt it had some value. She told her son that henceforth he will not play with the gem outside the house, but he will play with it inside the house in the garden. The merchant returned the next day and offered rupees 500. On hearing this, the mother told the child, you will not play with this in the garden also, you will play with it inside the house. Not to be outdone, the merchant upped the offer next day to rupees 5,000. The mother immediately took it to a bank, put the same marble, the one her child played with the dust on the street, in a safe deposit vault. Swami was that marble whose value we were totally unaware. we played with this gem in the street unaware of its value. Instead of keeping it in our heart as the most precious treasure, instead of protecting it like the apple of our eye, instead of using it as a key to illumination and liberation, we were seeking from it toys and trinkets, promotions and safe conduct. And today, 3 years after Mahasamadhi, particularly during this Navratri, which signifies the end of darkness and the beginning of knowledge, where the theme of Vedas are entirely reflected, where it's a period to transcend all limitations, all of us need to ask ourselves some questions. Have we been true to the memory of Sai? Have we acted post-Mahasamadhi consistent with our Master's teachings? Is our mind led forward into ever-widening thought and action? Have we narrowed our divisiveness? Have we acted without ego, envy, jealousy and hatred? Have we eschewed hypocrisy and sham? Have we preached unity of word, thought and deed? Do our words come out from the depth of truth? And above all, have we loved our fellow men? And to find true answers to these questions, we cannot look at our neighbor, but look into us, deep within us, tug our heartstrings, and then find the answer. That is the imperative of Dhava.
Sairam, dear listeners, welcome back to Morning Glory. We are coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India. You just heard a 4-minute clip from Professor Anantharaman when he spoke during Navratri 2014 at the Sai Kulwant Hall. Now, in case you wish to hear the entire talk, you can just Google it on our website, and it's Navratri speech of 30th of September 2014 by Professor Anantharaman. Now, clearly in the clip that you heard, he raised some very important questions. And today, 6 months later, let's see how he sees the situation in hindsight. And luckily for us, he's here in the studio this morning to answer the questions in person. So, sir, your concerns that you expressed in this speech, do they still persist or have they been assuaged?
Well, it's an interesting question. Let me think. Well, I feel the same way, except that earlier, along with this concern, I had a lot of anger. But now I guess the anger has been replaced by sadness.
Oh.
I was earlier angry that we are letting Swami down. I am now sad that we are really not living up to his expectations. It's a different feeling, I guess, different emphasis, anger earlier, an element of sadness and helplessness right now.
I see. You're vacillating between anger and sadness. Would you care to elaborate upon it a little bit more, please?
Let me try. You see, immediately after Swami left his physical body, there was such a groundswell of support. In fact, the first few thousands of people who came here were people who had never come to Prashanthi Nilayam before. I remember on one occasion there were a couple from Bangalore who said, when I asked them, why did we take the 3-hour journey from Bangalore? They said they could not come, and they asked me a question. What did we miss by not coming here? I told them, I don't know what you missed. I can only tell you what I gained. Darshanam Papanasanam, Sparshanam Karma Vimochanam, Sambhashanam Sankatanachanam. This is what I felt.
Basically, in English, you had his darshan, you were able to behold him, burn all your bad karma and your sins, purify yourself.
And I had my sparshan, where I purified my karma. Mm-hmm. And in my conversation, lot of my concerns and doubts vanished.
I see. Okay.
This is exactly what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, did we use this groundswell of support? Did we make something out of this? Did we create something out of this? What have we done to our whole infrastructure in the last 4 years, which was created by Swami all these years? Where are they now? What have we done? What have we, in addition, created in these years? I think these are the kind of concerns that I have now. What have we done in these last 4 years?
Now, in your opinion, where have we not used this groundswell of support? Everything is functioning as it was and even better, some may say.
Well, let me take some, you know, specific issues. For example, we went through the first water project, Anantapur Water Project, where 750 villages were provided with water in a period of 6 months. The extension of this water project to 75 villages took us over a year. Why has this happened? Let's take even the student population. I teach the students. They are our greatest concern. Swami once said, Ramakrishna created one Vivekananda. I want every student of mine to be a Vivekananda. Now, how many of our students have really become Vivekanandas? Why have they not given to Swami what he really needed out of them? Another example, we were told there was going to be a year-long 90th birthday ceremony. Where are they? So my whole question is, in the last 4 years, besides holding the whole fort, have we done anything more? Have we created anything more? And that has been my concern.
Mm-hmm. And you spoke of this lack of love in the speech that you gave at Navaratri. Where is this lack of love, in your opinion?
I guess every element there is lack of love, probably. You know, one of the questions that I asked in that speech earlier was, have we really loved our fellow men? Is that what we are doing right now? Why is Puttaparthi so devoid of love? Why does nobody speak with kindness anymore? Why do we get complaints of more and more of bureaucracy, decisions not being taken, etc.? In all fairness, I'm sure a lot of it existed even when Swami was here in his physical body. But unfortunately or fortunately, he was a fire that extinguished all such negative acts, feelings, etc., etc. In his absence, each one of these is becoming more and more critical and more serious. So in his absence, we need to be more loving, more caring. We need to be less self-centered. We need to be less egoistic. And we need to be less selfish. It's not possible to eliminate it completely, but there is greater reason for us to behave differently now that he is not there in his physical body. It shows, all these lapses show. Mm-hmm. It never showed when Swami was there, because people were prepared to accept a lot of this because they were having the physical darshan of Swami.
Now, what do you think is holding us back from being more loving, more sensitive, more compassionate, more caring, more humane and pleasant?
Well, it's anybody's guess. For example, Swami commenced all his discourses with the word, Prema Swarupalara, embodiments of love. I'm afraid we don't see each other as embodiments of love anymore. Swami also asked us to see the divinity within each one of us. Like, as you know, even the Indian practice of doing namaste to somebody else basically means I salute the divinity within you. I pay respect to the divinity within you. Mm-hmm. We do not do it anymore. We do not see our fellow beings now as full of divinity. So that whole concept probably is going. And I would say a lot of it is also due to our behavior pattern. I'm always fond of saying, bottleneck is at the neck of the bottle. Love, concern, etc., etc., must flow down from the top. I think our administrators, our senior citizens, and our other departmental heads who are at the helm of affairs must demonstrate this love in their behavior, attitude, dispensation of duties, and then you will find all of them flowing downwards. I think we need to demonstrate and establish this practice of love, mm-hmm. and courtesy, and consideration.
Now this lack of all these good qualities that you speak of, could it be because we have many other things to deal with, especially those of us who deal with the public on a one-on-one every single day, long hours of work, and also security concerns that the public is not aware of? At the back of their mind, all these people, whether they are on duty in the mandir or in canteens, they have to also keep an eye on the security. And then there is this told that repeat action injury causes because you're doing the same work over and over and over again. Could it be because of those? Security, long hours of work, repeat action?
I agree. But the security concerns, I would probably deny whether that should anything have to do with this. Honestly, I would say quite often security concerns is also used as an excuse for rudeness, honestly. So I would really not keep the security concerns as an issue at all. In fact, one can understand security concerns while Swami was there in his physical form. Now, why should there be security concerns right now? Why should we still push and jostle people? Why can't we request people with a smile anymore? So I really would not keep the security concerns as an issue at all. Long hours, yes, I recognize the fact that it is a lot of voluntary work. But the problem is, I think each level of people who themselves are subject to lack of love from their superiors, they reflect it back to the people below. And when they do that, they also reflect it to the people coming in. See, love is very contagious. Once it starts somewhere, it will spread all over. Courtesy also is like a virus, but it's a good virus.
And so are smiles, I think.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Once it is done, it will flow all over. When somebody goes to work in a department, when you find a departmental head morose and not using loving words at all, this will percolate right down, horizontally, vertically, and sideways. I think it's an attitude of mind. It has got to spread. Somehow or other, we seem to have lost that art, and particularly more so when Swami's physical presence is not there.
So in your opinion, what can we do to get over it?
Firstly, I think we must constantly remember the Swami himself was love personified. We must look at his life and how he lived and try to internalize it completely. Remember the days of darshan, you know, when Swami passed by you, he looked at you and you just melted in that moment. There was an overwhelming feeling of love he created in you and around you. Because it was around you, you started loving everybody else. Somehow or other, somewhere, we need to bring it back. And we need to practice it all over. When people come to accommodation, I don't think people at the accommodation should talk to them rudely. At the gate, when they should enter to the other gate, do it with a smile. You do not rudely ask them to go around. Make believe that Swami is around you. Previously when Swami was there in his physical form, there was a perception that if they behave rudely, Swami will come to know about it. Now Swami is still there. He can still know that you are behaving rudely. Somehow or other, this feeling has got to be brought about, and you must constantly be told that Swami is there around you, somewhere, watching you. You need to love people. You need to have courtesy of people. I think it's an attitude of mind that needs to be brought about.
Now, very interesting. Professor Anant Raman, what's your personal vision of an aspirational Prashanthi Nilayam experience, an ideal one?
Vision, it takes several forms. A vision where when I enter, the Seva will greet me with a smile and with Sai Ram in his lips. A vision where when I go to an office, an accommodation, nobody barks at me. A vision where I need service from anywhere in any department within the ashram, people provide it willingly and happily. A vision where I see Swami everywhere. A vision where I see Swami in my fellow being, in the person sitting next to me, in the person whom I deal with. That's the kind of vision I would like to find in Prashanthi Nilayam. This is the kind of vision that existed before. To be a very large extent, it seems to be slowly extinguishing right now. That's the vision I would like to get back.
Wow, okay, very nice. I'm sure it's many, many people's vision that you share or you articulated. Your concluding thoughts.
Swami once told a chinnakatha of a beggar who was sitting by the side of a box. Mm-hmm. There was a passerby who asked him, the beggar asked him, can you spare me some change? The passerby said, I have nothing, but what is there in the box on which you are sitting? The beggar said, it's nothing. The stranger said, "Pry it open." The beggar pried it open and he found it was filled with gold. And when each one of us are able to go within, we too will find that gold. That gold is the divinity within us. Swami, while he was around, constantly was trying to tell us that there is this divinity and there is this gold within you. I wish we spend our time trying to find that. To reflect the words of Khalil Gibran also, who once said, "Don't go outside the house to see the flowers, my friend. They are within you, and each flower is 1,000 petals." I think that's what we must do. That's what Swami tried telling us to do during his entire living moment. I think we must seek it and we must get it back.
So go back to the drawing board, start with yourself, and what you discover inside has to translate into our actions, our words, our attitude, our behavior, our expressions.
Absolutely.
Body language and facial expression, everything. Wow. Thank you very much, Professor Anantharaman, for joining me on this very hot and sensitive topic. And I hope all of us can take this responsibility to heart and work on ourselves to be more loving and caring and humble and realize we're only instruments in Swami's hands. I guess we get carried away sometimes by the titles we wear or the scarves we wear. Really appreciate your candor deeply today, sir. Thank you. So, dear listeners, that was our studio guest, Professor Anantharaman of the Sai University, and he touched upon a very sensitive topic of how we can make the Prashanthi Nilayam experience more loving, welcoming, and warm for the seekers who come to our ashram from all over the world. What are your thoughts on this topic and this discussion that we just had? So please, dear brothers and sisters, do share your thoughts, comments, and feedback on this issue with us by email at listener@radiosai.org. And I'm pretty sure everyone out there has an opinion on this issue, and we want to know what it is. So please be honest and tell us what's on your mind. Seriously, your feedback helps us very, very much, and we are very keen to self-improve. So this is a open sesame. Tell us what's on your mind, what can we do better, and we'd like to take it to heart. Once again, you can reach us by email at listener@radiosai.org. Now moving along, it is now time for part 2 of our Fleeting Moments interview with Mr. Venugopal. He is in conversation with Radio Sai's Mr. Bishop Rushdie. This interview will be followed by a program by Professor G. Venkatraman. As I leave you to enjoy this conversation for the next 48 minutes, I bid you Sai Ram and remind you once again to keep sending us your feedback, please, at listener@radiosai.org. Jai Sai Ram, and enjoy the rest of the program.
చాలా బాగుంది బంగారు. ఈ పాటలో నా జీవితం, నా సందేశం, నా ఆశయం అన్ని ఇమిడి ఉన్నాయి. మై లైఫ్, మై మెసేజ్ అండ్ వాట్ ఐ వాంట్ షుడ్ హ్యాపెన్ ఇస్ ఆల్ దేర్ ఇన్ దిస్ వన్ సాంగ్, విచ్ ఇస్ దట్ సాయి మాత బిడ్డలం అందరం, సత్య సాయి మాత బిడ్డలమే అందరం. యు నో దట్ సాంగ్, స్టూడెంట్స్ హావ్ సంగ్ ఇట్ మెనీ టైమ్స్ ఆఫ్టర్ దాట్. సో వాట్ హ్యాపెండ్ ఆఫ్టర్ దాట్ వాజ్ దట్ స్వామి కేమ్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ ది ఇంటర్వ్యూ రూమ్. And he asked the bhajan group, and I remember Brother Srinivaslu and some of the other singers were there. And Swami asked them, "Could you hear?" And they said, "Swami, we heard it very feebly because it was inside the interview room." So he called us again out and he made us sing it again. And then he called some of the singers from the bhajan group and told them, "You learn this song from them and sing it the next time." And so they actually sat down, and after Swami left, they sat down and wrote the song, and that is how the Sai Mata Bidala became a regular in Puttaparthi. But then the beauty of it was that the song, Swami told us that go to every district, go to every nook and corner of the state and sing this song. Because it has the message that I want to tell people. And Swami was very, very happy with that song being sung. And even I remember, even till the last few interactions that Swami had with the team, he would always ask for that song to be sung.
Wow.
So it was a song which he really liked.
It was composed, written by one of the members of the youth.
Yes, it was written by one of the members of the youth. It was inspired by an RSS song, actually. And there was a song with a similar tune, which was on the Desha Mata. And he just took the tune.
Patriotic song.
Yeah, patriotic song. And he took the tune and put these lyrics in, because Swami's message goes into it. that was another beautiful opportunity, so to say, for the team as well. So yeah, I mean, I'm going on about the team. It's probably fleeting moments is more about.
No, us, I think it's all about. But it's nothing about you. It's about how Swami was shaping every member
absolutely,
of the team.
Absolutely, and that was those were and the reason why I'm recounting these incidents is because these are the things that shaped me, and I started to feel a greater purpose in my life. I remember when I just got into engineering, I was like low on confidence. I couldn't crack the IIT, so I was feeling miserable about that. I was feeling that, you know, this is what is my life for, and that's when I started reading Swami's literature. I started getting into the youth team, and I discovered a greater purpose for life. I discovered that there is so much work to be done, and at the same time, so much that God wants you to do. That Swami wants all of us to do, and there's so much work to do. And therefore, I became so much more passionate and attached to the work. So much so that, in fact, I used to have problems with my parents that they used to say, why are you so totally into this? I mean, you should be studying for some time at least. So it became, from this extreme, I went to the other extreme.
Once upon a time, your parents were unhappy that you do not have faith in Bhagwan.
Yeah, exactly. And the same parents were now saying, what is this? You just went for Gram Seva the last month and this. And so this was the kind of scenario that I was in. And like I said, I was not interested in becoming a student. I was more interested in doing more and more Seva and getting into that route. Then subsequently what happened was, I told you about the engineers group interview, right? So one of the engineers group interviews, I actually asked Swami about parents. So I asked Swami, and I'm sharing this with you because a lot of youngsters come to me and ask me this, and I think this will probably be a good one for all of them. So I asked Swami, my parents say that you just went to Seva the last month. Why are you wanting to go now? Of course, my parents have changed, okay? to their credit, if they listen to this, they'll probably be upset. But at that time, I said that to Swami. And they say that you just went to Seva last month. And why are you going again now? And Swami said, you go back. And Swami very lovingly said, you go back, tell your father, yesterday you ate food. Will that suffice for today? Yesterday if you ate food, today also you have to eat food. Similarly, a roj seva, that seva was for that month, this seva is for this month. So seva is not something that you will do once in a year. You have to continuously keep doing. And then I said, Swami, if I tell this to my father, he will scold me. And then Swami said, see, it is your mistake. It is the fault lies with you. Because you don't communicate properly to your parents. He said, can you not talk a little lovingly to your parents and explain to them what happens in the village? Can you not do that much? Can you not take them to one of the Gram Sevas that you're going to? Then they will know what kind of work is done. Otherwise, they will think that you're wasting time. They will only think that you're going as a band of youngsters and, wasting time, and they won't even know the kind of work that you're doing. Believe me, brother, this solution worked like magic for me.
Mm-hmm.
The next Gram Seva, I took my father along. I know it was odd for me also because the rest of the team was all youngsters, but because Swami had said that particularly, I took him along. And after that, I saw a complete change in my parents' attitude towards me going to any of these Seva activities. They've always been encouraging since then.
Wow.
So Swami always has a solution, and the message that really comes out of this is that most of us youngsters generally tend to not communicate well with our parents. We assume, in fact, I remember I was arguing with Swami, I was saying that, I said that, Swami, why should I even do that? They are also devotees, can they not understand? Because we assume that they will understand. And Swami's response was, Swami said, no, that is wrong. Talalu vairaina cho talampulu vairaunu. He said, as the heads are different, or rather the different brains, and will think differently. Their bhakti is theirs, your bhakti is yours. Their marga, the way they look at Swami and the way they think that Swami should be pleased is their way. The way you think is your way. So it will never be possible that they will understand what you want to do. But it is your duty to make that effort to help them understand. So that solution worked like magic for me. And I think a lot of youngsters today, when they come to me and talk about parents not being cooperative, I always recount this incident to them, because it is important to keep your parents in the know.
Yes.
It is also important to explain to them the importance of the good work that you are doing, and even they will feel inspired the way you feel inspired. So I think that was one very, very beautiful instruction that Bhagavan gave. Some of the other things that happened and was during one of the group interviews that we had, again an engineer's team interview, where Swami was talking about education, and he was asking us how many marks you got.
Mm-hmm.
And we were a little ashamed, because our marks are never in the 90s. Remember, I was always in the first class, but 60s, 70s percentages kind of. So when Swami asked me, I didn't reply. So I was just looking at him silently, because I thought it would be embarrassing to tell my marks to him. And then Swami said, first class ochinda, yes. Did you get first class at least? I said, yes, Swami. How much percentage on top of first class did you get? So first class means 60%, okay?
Yes.
Then I said, Swami, another 7%. Swami said, first class varku nene chadutunnanu, 7% varku nu chadivavu.
Oh my god.
So what Swami meant was, up to your getting first class, I am studying for you. The remaining 7% is what you are studying, is it? And I had the audacity to answer back to Swami. Of course, I will tell you how he cut that down later, but then I tell Swami I am happy with first class. Everybody laughed. So that was kind of sweet relationship. We were all only youngsters with Swami. So Swami keeps saying, no, among women I am a woman, among men I am a man. Similarly, among youth, he was always a youth. So he would always talk like any other youngster, and that was another beautiful this thing for us. So another nice incident that I can actually go on. I mean, it's just going on, coming, the flow is. So another nice thing another very important thing that Swami told us during that same interaction was that he said, what are you studying? So he said, electrical engineering, Swami. And Swami said that, why are you studying electrical engineering? I didn't have an answer for that. I said, Swami, parents told me to join engineering, I joined. And Swami said, no, that should not be the purpose of your study. See, look at Swami's way of putting it. No? He knew that my passion was in seva. So he said, now you are going to Gram Seva and all that. So what happened was, I had bunked, I don't know if the international audience will understand the term bunked, but I had skipped my internal examinations for one of the semesters to go and attend a village camp.
Oh my god.
And Swami picked up on that, and he said, he didn't say that directly, but he said, see, if you miss, see boys, like you generalized it, see, if you miss your exams and go for seva, do you think Swami will be happy? And so Swami said that, and then he looked at me, and I knew that this thing is coming for me. And then he said, see, as it is important to do seva, it is also equally important, more important to study well. Do you know why? Because if you don't study well, and if you fail, and you will end up doing only labor kind of seva. But what I want you to do is study well, become excellent in your field, then your contribution can be much more.
Yes.
See, all those, then Swami said, all those people you see sitting in the veranda, all those are accomplished people. You know why? Because they excelled in their field, and today they are doing big, big projects for Swami. Now you decide if you want to become that squirrel or if you want to become Hanuman.
Wow, Swami told that.
So he said, you decide if you want to become that squirrel or if you want to become Hanuman. So it is all up to you. And then he said, this is also my work. Think that this is my work, and study. Study hard, do well. Then you can use your, and lot of youngsters today, most of the youngsters, at least in our state, I don't know about other states, but most of the youngsters who finish their 11th and 12th generally get into graduation based on their parents' choice, not so much based on what they actually want to do. And Swami was actually trying to, I mean, he was suggesting that whatever you get into, do it with full commitment and do well so that you can be of greater use to society. So Swami's approach was always that the socio, how do I call that? The
social welfare multiplier effect,
yes,
of what you're studying.
Absolutely. So he always looked at it that way. It was never about, oh, you will, if you earn this, if you go this route, and a lot of parents think that way, right? That, okay, if you become this, then you will earn this much more. If you become that, then you will earn that much. And therefore, you should choose this. So, Swami's approach was never that. He was always telling us that no matter what you study, how best can that be utilized for society is what you should be looking at. So his return on investment was not in terms of how much money you will make. His return on the investment of time or effort or money in studying what you have was the return has to be on as a benefit to society.
How much difference can you make in others' lives?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the way Swami encouraged and looked at it, and it brought a new perspective. And that's when I realized that, hey, actually studying is also important, because only if I study well and become something, can I serve more effectively.
Yes.
And today I realize that, and as having been through the U team, been with the organization for this long, and today I realize the value of being well settled.
Yes.
Because you can then contribute at a much different...
Today you're the assistant vice president of HSBC. Now you're able to engage in society service. As you mentioned, you're well settled because, you know, you have a decent job today.
Correct.
You have a respectable position, and you know your job gives you the resources and the time to go ahead and engage yourself in service.
Correct.
It gives you that security, that comfort zone.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was a big lesson that I learned during that group interview, that interaction. And that I knew that was more for me than, because he was going on looking at me after every line that he was uttering. But then that was another nice incident about how Swami showed me the importance of studying well. Then there were some other very beautiful interactions. So there was one interaction where we were used to telling Swami, and I learned this from some of our senior brothers, so they used to do that, so I also did that when I had the opportunity. So I was telling Swami once, Swami, this, we did this in this village, we did this in this place, we did this in this. So I was like kind of going on saying, we did this. Swami heard me out, and then he said, all this you did, what did I do? He asked.
Oh.
And then it hit me, oh, okay, so Swami's meaning that actually it's he who's the doer.
Yes.
So then Swami very beautifully, he said, see, what is selflessness? He asked. So we didn't know what to say. So he said, Swami, thinking about others, doing things for others. And that's what generally we interpret selflessness as, right? And then Swami said, no. Doing something for others, thinking about others, is being less selfish.
Mm-hmm.
What is being selfless? He asked. Obviously, we didn't have any answer. And we were just all looking at him. And then he said, when you give up the sense of doership, that is selflessness, he said.
Wow.
So I can't think of any other, maybe spiritual master, and probably too much of a statement, but I can't think of anybody else who can give a more beautiful definition. There is a thin line between the two. People think that we are engaged in seva, and therefore it is selfless. But Swami's definition of selfless is very different.
Miss that self, that small s, that is yourself. If it merges with that capital S, which is that universal self.
So there is no small s. That's what it is, right? Giving up doership totally means what? Which means you completely become an instrument in God's hands. That is why Swami says, that the famous quote that often Swami used to say was that, forget the good that you have done to others and forget the harm others have done to you. So when can you, forgetting the good that you have done to others would mean that you cannot recount all of that and tell Swami that, Swami, we've done this. So he was trying to say that, you know, that it is about giving up doership. So who has done, Swami, you have done, that's it. That was another beautiful lesson. I know it's difficult to, I mean, when you try to put into practice, but then every time I feel like whenever we are doing this, the reports for the organization or something, it always comes back to my mind that, okay, all this is done by Swami, not by us.
You even feel uncomfortable saying that we have done
yes,
this.
Yes, absolutely. So we no longer write, we did this. Mm. We always write that Swami did this, using this team as an instrument or something like that. Mm. That was another very nice interaction message. Then there was one other occasion when we were telling Swami that Swami you've done, you know, that time Swami was 75, so this was in the year 2000, and said Swami you've done so much for humanity, you keep taking so much of strain to do all of this. So the words we used were, we said, Swami meer ento shrama teeskuni ఇంత చేస్తున్నారు, మేము అంత ఇంత కొంచెం కూడా చేయలేకపోతున్నాము అని వాళ్ళు, మీనింగ్ యూఆర్ టేకింగ్ సో మచ్ ఆఫ్ ఎఫర్ట్ అండ్ సో మచ్ ఆఫ్ పెయిన్ టు డూ ఆల్ దట్ యూఆర్ డూయింగ్ ఆల్ ది ప్రాజెక్ట్స్, వీఆర్ నాట్ ఈవెన్ ఏబుల్ టు డూ అ స్మాల్ మినిస్క్యూల్ పార్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఇట్. దెన్ స్వామి సెడ్ అండ్ వి సెడ్ స్వామి గివ్ అస్ మోర్ స్ట్రెంగ్త్ టు బి ఏబుల్ టు డూ మోర్ వర్క్. స్వామి సెడ్ మీరు అన్నదంతా బాగానే ఉంది, వాట్ యూ సెడ్ ఇస్ నైస్, బట్ యూ యూజ్ దట్ వర్డ్ శ్రమ that I did not like, he said. Meerantho shrama teeskun chestunnaru, we said that Swami you are taking so much of shrama and doing so much of pain and doing so much of strain and doing all this. Swami said, I did not like that word. He said, nen chesedi shrama kaadu bangaru, prema. So I do it out of love, not out of shrama. Then Swami said, meeru kuda, you also, if you feel it is strain, don't do. Only if you feel it is love, do.
Wow.
Only when you feel that it is out of your service should spring out of love, not out of some not out of a feeling of, oh, I have to do this kind of it shouldn't be imposed on you, it should come out spontaneously out of love. And I think that is what Swami means when he says, you know, duty with love, duty without love, and when he says love without duty, that is what Swami does, and that is the reason why he very beautifully, you know, said that. All these things started showing me facets of Swami and also an example of how we should, what our attitude should be when we are engaged in work. So there was, I mean, as I am narrating, it's just flowing. So there was one more beautiful interaction I had. So one day I asked Swami, Swami, how is it that you are able to love everyone?
Mm-hmm.
I said, how is it possible? And then he said, it is very easy, it is natural. So for Swami, it is obviously natural. So he said, it's natural. I said, Swami, I also think that I should love everyone. So those were the days when I told you, you know, I was reading a lot of literature and,
yes,
and I was trying to follow and all that. So I said, Swami, I also think I should love everyone. I get onto the road, I keep saying to myself, I should love all. Some guy bangs into me. I literally narrated this to Swami like this, and I said, some guy bangs into me, and the next thing that comes out of my mouth is some abuse for that guy. And where is the love? It is all gone. And I said, how is it possible that you do it? Then Swami very beautifully said, he asked, forget about all that. Does your father love you? He asked. I didn't know where this question was coming from, and I was like, I think so, Swami, I said. I think so. Swami said, yeah, your father loves you. Why does he love you? I didn't have an answer. And Swami said, atana amsham nunchi puttevu anukuntunnadu, andukani ninnu premistunnadu. Means, he thinks that you are born from him, as a part of him. You are his amsha, is what his feeling is. Therefore, he loves you. Then he said, మీ నాన్న అలా అనుకుంటేనే నిన్ను ప్రేమిస్తున్నాడే, నాకు తెలుసురా మీరంతా నా అంశం నుంచి పుట్టారు, నేను ప్రేమించకుండా ఎట్టుంటాను. సో హీ సెడ్ యువర్ ఫాదర్ ఈజ్ ఓన్లీ థింకింగ్ దట్ యువర్ బోర్న్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ హిమ్, బట్ ఐ నో దట్ ఆల్ ఆఫ్ యువర్ బోర్న్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ మీ, హౌ మచ్ మోర్ షుడ్ ఐ లవ్ యూ. దెన్ హీ సెడ్, నాకు చాలా న్యాచురల్. దెన్ హీ సెడ్, నాట్ ఓన్లీ ఫర్ మీ, ఇట్ ఈస్ యాక్చువల్లీ న్యాచురల్ ఫర్ యూ ఆల్సో. ఓన్లీ థింగ్ ఈజ్ యూ షుడ్ నో, వెన్ యూ నో ఆటోమేటికలీ యూ విల్ లవ్ ఎవ్రీవన్. So he kind of merged that wisdom into the love, and he said that when you actually attain that wisdom that all are part of the same being, the love becomes automatic. That is the reason why Swami's love flows out. And then as a follow-up question, I asked him, Swami, how do I practice this? Okay, I am not in the state where I recognize this truth, but how do I practice this? And then Swami said, see, when I say love all, it does not mean that you go to everybody on the road and go and hug him and say, I love you. Did you observe Swami in darshan any time? I said, yes, Swami. Obviously, every time we would see Swami walking in darshan. Swami said, I don't talk to everyone. I don't speak to everyone. I speak to only some. I don't talk to everyone. I don't touch everyone. I don't let everybody touch me. But at the same time, my love for everyone is the same. Then Swami said, similarly, it is not necessary that you go out and say that to everybody, that you love them. Whenever you see anybody in distress, even if you pray to God that let his distress go, let him be happy, that itself is an expression of love. So he said the best thing that you can do is pray for people. If you can help, great. If you cannot help, pray. So that was another wonderful instruction that I remember from one of those group interviews. And all of these were before the student life. I have not even come to the student life. And then another nice interaction I had, and I remember this very fondly, was that I asked Swami once, Swami, I know that you are God. Somehow I know it. But why am I not able to believe it fully? And I said, the way I framed that question was, Swami, 100% faith I am not able to get. Then Swami said, Chudu Bangaru, na drushtilo faith lo 100%, 70%, 50% undavu. Faith unte undi, lekapothe ledu. Meaning, Swami was saying, in my opinion, there is no such thing as 100%, 70%. There is no percentage in faith, basically. Either you have faith or you don't have faith. Then I said, Swami, then I am ruined. Because if I don't have faith, how will I ever, surrender and reach your lotus feet? And then Swami said, and at that time I didn't understand it fully, but Swami said, neeku faith lekapoyina parvaledu, namakam undi adi chalu. Which meant, what he said was, I'll translate it in English, he said, if you don't have faith, it is okay. You have belief, that is enough. And at that point of time, I didn't even realize what he meant by the difference, what the difference was. So I asked him, Swami, what? I didn't understand. And Swami said, because you have belief, you came, no. But faith is something far deeper, he said. Faith means you will not care about anything. You don't need a job, you don't need a family, you don't need anything else. Only faith that God will take care of you fully. So there is a difference, he said. And then he said, I know meeku 100% faith lekapodame namanchidi, he told. If you don't have faith only, it is good, then only you will work, he said. in jest. But then the deeper message was that there is a, most of us, and to this date I can say that confidently, most of us, if not all, who come to Swami, are people who kind of believe in him being God. But do we have faith that he will completely take care? Can we let go of everything that we have?
Yes.
I'm not too sure.
So that's a journey.
That's a journey, exactly. So there is a definite distinction between what it is to have faith and what it is. And remember in another interaction when he was sending me away, I asked him this question about Meera. About Meerabai when she, she drinks that poison. That the Rana commands her to drink poison. And the story goes that she says she offers it to Lord Krishna and drinks it and it becomes nectar and she doesn't die. So I asked Swami, when she was about to drink that, what was going through her mind? Did she have the faith that Krishna will take care of her? What was going through her mind? And then Swami said, nothing. There was nothing in her mind. It became her habit to offer whatever comes to her to Lord Krishna. So naturally she offered whatever came to her to Krishna and drank it. Then he said, that is faith. What she had is faith. So the point is that, you know, we take it very lightly when we say I have faith in Swami or but faith is a far, far deeper
faith and surrender. I think
word. Yeah, faith and surrender. And then Swami, about the surrender thing. So Swami was also saying that in the same conversation, he said, I had asked him was, Swami, if I don't ever develop faith, how will I surrender at your lotus feet? And then Swami said, surrender ante idhar undali kada. Okati puchkune vaadu undali, okati icche vaadu undali. So surrender means two have to be there. One has to receive your surrender. One who has to offer, who has to come and surrender. And Swami said, I am telling you, what am I going on telling you? There are no two, there is only one. There is no concept of surrender. Once you develop faith, you will become that.
Yeah.
So that these were some of the deeper lessons which started, which are not bookish. I mean, which are not stuff that I understood out of the books that I had read. And this was something more deeper. And of course, my thought process at that time was, because we are doing some work and Swami is giving us opportunities like this, we are getting to have these interactions. So I really was not so interested in becoming a student at that point in time. And then there's another nice incident that I also wanted to share. So there was this interview where Swami was narrating to us a story. Swami started off saying, do you know the story of Bilva Mangala? And I had never heard of any term like that before, so I said, no, Swami. And Swami said, oh, you don't know Bilva Mangala story? Let me tell you. And Swami is very good at narrating stories. I'm sure you would have experienced that in so many of the three sessions. And for me, it was only the interviews where I got to see those. So Swami started to describe this story. And he said that, you know, there was one youngster. And the way Swami would relate it, because there was a band of youngsters there. Swami said, there was one youngster, just like you boys. There was one, and he was, you know, he was a cowboy, he said. Like, cowboy, not American cowboy, Indian cowboy. So what he meant was, he was a cowherd, basically. So he was, but he was a very good singer. And he would sing, and he would sing very beautifully. And like you boys, he was singing some film song. Obviously, at that time, there was no film song. But yes. Swami was trying to relate it to us as much as possible. He said, like you boys, he was also singing some film song. And he was singing some song like that. And then he saw this young lady walk by. And ventane modulaipo in hysteria. Immediately the hysteria started. Just like you boys. For everything he would make it so relevant to the time and the crowd and the audience that was there. So just like you boys, he also started to, then he started walking behind her. And as he walked behind her, he went right behind her till her home. When she entered her home, her husband was sitting at the doorstep outside and he was weaving something, and he saw this boy and he asked, why are you here? And apparently Bilva Mangala said that I came walking behind that lady. So this, obviously the husband wouldn't want an answer like that, so he immediately took up a stick and started beating him left, right and center. And then the lady heard the commotion and came out. And she asked what happened, and then the husband told her that, you know, this guy came chasing, walking behind you. He probably got enticed by you, whatever. And then the lady apparently tells Bilva Mangala that no. And Swami, that beautiful poem that Swami tells, no, Kannula Nichina Renduka Telusa, Vitini Vatini Chuchutaka Kaduka, Du Bhagavantuni Chuchutaku, Chavula Nichina. That there's a beautiful flow that Swami has. What it means is that eyes are given not to watch people and beauty and nature and all that. It is, they are given so that you can watch the Creator, you can see, you can have the darshan of the Lord. Ears are not given to listen to people talking about each other, but ears are given to listen to the name of the Lord being chanted. And all that, the whole thing Swami told, the tongue is not given to sing film songs and to abuse others. It is given to chant the name of God. Feet are not given to run behind this person and that person and run here and there like some dog, but they are given to take you to the sannidhi of the Lord. So all that whole thing Swami beautifully said that. I mean, basically they were Swami's words, which he is trying to put through this story. And and then this lady tells him that. And then Swami said, Bilva Mangala felt very bad. And he came out And so this is a little offshoot from the original story that we know. So I'll come to that. So he said he came out, and then he found one bush of thorns, and he immediately plucked two thorns, and he thought, "Gee, I saw with such bad looks, I don't deserve to have eyes." And he immediately pierced his eyes, he said, and he became blind. Then Swami said he is the same person became Surdas, and later he became a devotee of, so he started singing on Lord Krishna, and then Swami said Lord Krishna came and gave him darshan, and he said I will give you your eyesight back, and it seems Surdas refused and said that no, if you give me my eyesight back, I will start seeing others again. I don't want to. Now that you have given me your darshan, let me see only you. And then it seems in this, so I don't know if it's there in any other book or anything, but Swami said, then Lord Krishna showed him all the scenes of the various incidents that actually happened during the Krishna avatar. And every time he showed a scene is when he wrote those songs, when he composed those songs, all the Surdas bhajans that we know of. So that is how he, you know, he became that way. But then Swami said, and the way Swami ended was nice. He said, see, he had bad looks for one time and he immediately pierced his eyes. You boys are having bad looks so many times. And then Swami said, you need not pierce your eyes. Just make a resolve that you will not have bad looks anymore. I mean, the message went in so deeply, you know, into all the youngsters, and I know it went in very deeply for me, definitely. But yeah, man, this is such an important thing, you know, that you should not have bad looks. You should have complete control over your what you're seeing, what you're saying, and all of that. So that it's about the beauty of how Swami can send a message into a youngster's heart, and that was amazing. There were some beautiful transformation stories I saw among these group of youngsters. There was one of my classmates who also came with us, who was one of those rowdy cheater kind of persons in the college. You know, there used to be, outside colleges will always have gangs and students ganging up together and politics, influence of politics and all of that. This guy was from a community which was known for that, and they were into everything, you know, non-vegetarianism, alcoholism, and plus all of this violence and all of that stuff. In fact, in our first year, he beat up somebody who was almost fatally injured, hospitalized, and then the police were looking for him, and that kind of story had also happened. This was in our second year ending, I think, third year, first semester, that we came to Swami, and he came along. So he came along, and so the story goes like this. So this boy used to board the same bus that I used to board from on my way back from college to home. And those days I used to read Swami's summer shards in the bus while going back. So there was the summer course book. And this guy used to, typically we were classmates, so he would sit next to me. And every day he would see that I'm not talking to him or chit-chatting, I'm just sitting and reading this book. And he was wondering what this book is that is catching so much of my attention and interest. So one day he asked, after you finish that book, can you give it to me? I will also like to read. I said, sure, why not? And I gave it to him. And in fact, I didn't even wait to finish the book. I gave it to him straight away. I took another copy from somebody else to finish the rest of the book. But I gave it to him straight away because as soon as he gets a thought, let me give it. So he started reading this book, and I saw sea change in him. He probably finished it in a week.
Mm-hmm.
In 1 week, I saw a complete change in him. And then he came to know that I and one more brother were organizing this trip, engineering trip, and he said, I want to come along. That's how he came. And in the group interview, Swami looks at this guy and says, see, all of you should not, after you finish engineering, all of you should not go for further studies in the same field. Some of you can do IAS, IPS or something like that. So this guy decided from that interview onwards that he has to, you know, prepare for civils. And he came out. Swami didn't talk to him much. This was the only thing. he came out. Believe me, he stopped eating non-vegetarian. He stopped consuming alcohol. His whole community was known to be part of such gatherings. He, in fact, told his mother. So there was concern in it at his home that if you don't eat non-veg, you'll become weak and all of that. But then he stuck to his resolve. See, it was easy for me because I'm from a vegetarian family anyways. But for somebody in whose family it is a culture and nobody else is, if it comes from your parents, it's a different thing. But if you have to drive it, it is really tough. And still he got out of all those gangs that he was part of. He was constantly only talking about how can I live my life in a way that Swami will appreciate. Just that one interaction. I mean, that is the effect that Swami had on young minds, you know. And that I have no words to describe how much I was moved by seeing this transformation in this guy. And by the time the college ended, he was the class topper.
Class topper?
Yeah.
Wow. So did he try for civil after that?
Yes, and he joined civils after that. So he cleared civils and he's joined. I think he got railway service or something, but he's joined into service. And his intention and motive behind joining was also that he should stand as an example of being clean and not giving in to any bribery and all of that. So he's serving in the north somewhere. He keeps calling me once in a while.
You should get into the studio once.
Yeah, maybe. Whenever he comes. I don't know when he will plan to come. But then,
yes.
That is another beautiful transformation story that I had, I was witness to. And there are so many incidents. Let me also narrate to you one more nice, beautiful experience of how I saw Swami responding to prayers.
Mm-hmm.
So, we had come as this was another engineer's trip, and we had come. Previous year, Swami had told that, like, you bring them again, bring another group of boys next year, and I will call them and all that. So, the following year, again, we came as a group of engineering students. And in our ashram, you generally, those days the norm was that you take a chit from Unnikrishnan Garu to sit as a group, and you get to sit as a group, but you get only three darshans, and so we sat as a group for three darshans, and all three darshans Swami happily ignored us. He didn't even look towards us, and the three darshans were over, so we cannot sit as a group anymore, so obviously we have to sit in the number lines. Now, three darshans meant 2 days are over, and the second day evening we were sitting and wondering what to do, because all the other, except for two of us, the others were all newcomers, first time to Prashant Nilayam, and we told them very confidently that Swami will call us, because he has already promised us last year. So we were also naive in that sense, because with Swami it's always love my uncertainty, right?
Yes.
So all of them were waiting in expectation, but we didn't know what to do, and we were sure that they won't wait for another day or more than another day. At max we can probably hold them back for just another day. I don't know about them, but we were very desperate. So me and that other guy were desperate to get Swami to talk to us. And we were wondering what went wrong. And we had tried everything, you know, 108 times do Sai Gayatri before the morning darshan, 108 times do Gayatri before the evening darshan, and all kinds of prayers. And Swami had not even looked at us once. So it was really, we were wondering what to do. Then the other brother came up with an idea. He said, let's do Satcharitra Parayanam. He said, let's do Satcharitra Parayanam. From where do we get Satcharitra books suddenly? You know? nobody had Satcharitra books. Immediately we went out, searched in some shops outside the ashram and got them. And we told the group of boys that some of us are planning to do Satcharitra Parayanam all night without sleeping. Because these guys are all new, right?
Hmm.
So whoever is interested can join. And I was shocked that everybody said, I also want to do. And these guys were not even like Sai youth, or they were not devotees or anything. Okay, so they were surprised that everybody is saying, I will also do. So we bought, I think we were 15 of us, we bought 15 copies of Satcharitra. All through the night we sat and read the Satcharitra. Some completed it, some couldn't complete it. 4 o'clock we had to come for darshan lines. That's when the darshan lines start. That was the first time, I think the second time in my life that I felt I heard a voice inside me. And what happened was that all of us were, first we all sit on that, on the slope, right? I don't know if you've ever been on the other side, that's the devotee's side, darshan yes. line side. So what happens is you sit on the slope first.
Correct.
And then they slowly tokens. Yeah, let you come and form lines. So all of us were sitting there.
Hmm.
And somehow I felt, within me I felt that you go and sit first, let the others follow. So anyway, I was sitting in front, so I said all of us will sit in one line. So earlier our strategy was, before that our strategy, I mean we had to strategize now, because now that the group darshans have gone out, so we had to strategize. So our strategy was that we will split into three lines,
yes.
whoever gets the first line, the others will, they'll keep place for the others and they'll come out, something like that. But then I kind of felt from within me that all have to sit together and I have to go and sit first. So I just, as they let us down into the, to for the number line, token lines, I just walked down and sat in one line. And all of us sat in the same line. And somehow inside me I felt, today we are getting the first line. And lo and behold, as the person in front, whoever it was, picked the token, it was number one. So we all, you know, were in the first line. So all 15 of us were in the first line. And we all sat. There's one the Kulwanthal, in the Sai Kulwanthal, there's one turning where close to the stage where Swami would take round the pillar and then come towards the stage area. So he took that turning, and that's where all 15 of us were sitting. So as he turned around, he looked at me from a distance. So I was sitting at the end of the 15th guy was me. He looked at me from that distance, and he was shouting. Not angrily, but with that mischievous smile on his face, that "Hey, mera ratrantha padko ni bolay," he said.
Oh my
then,
God!
What, the whole night you didn't let me sleep, he said. So as he was, since he was looking at me and talking, I on my knees, I just, you know, went quickly closer to him, and I said, "Swami, what?" Then Swami said, "What is this? The whole night you didn't let me sleep." And I said, "Swami, all boys are praying. Swami, please call us for an interview." Then Swami said, "Interviewer. You know, the room is so small." And I said, "Swami, if you will, any number can fit in, Swami. Please call us for an interview." Then Swami said, "Okay, I will see." And then he walked away. In the evening, so this happened. So at least I was happy that he noticed us. In the evening darshan, in the afternoon darshan rather, Swami used to come at around 2:30 that time. This time again I came confidently and I thought, you know, Swami's will is there, so it will again be number one, but it came as number 14. So, so we were somewhere behind, and I was wondering how we will even show our face to Swami. But as Swami came in the darshan round, the same place where he spoke to me in the morning, he was looking for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sent word through that Sevadal who was sitting there that, you know, their Hyderabad group was sitting here, where are they? Call them. So as this guy got up, we realized that he's probably looking for us, and then we were shoved to the veranda. He went there and sat, and then subsequently Swami called some family, and then after that he called us. And when he called us in, inside the, during the interview, Swami made a comment. So this is typical of Swami, okay? He will not make it look like, oh, this is, you know what, I know this kind. You know, he very nonchalantly said, "See, whether you are in first line or in 14th line, if I want to call you, I call you."
Wow.
Now, so the other boys who are there, like, how did he know that we got the 14th? First line is easy because we were right in front, so yes. It should have been token number one, obviously. Yes. How would he know that we got 14th? So Swami was like, you know, if I want to call you, I call you. If it was first line or 14th line. So what it made me realize was two things. One is that prayers do reach him, and the response showed. You know, when he said whole night I didn't sleep, he meant that you didn't sleep, obviously, and. The other thing was that he plans everything. So when we when we all feel. So that's why when I was a student also, I kind of carried that with me, because I never used to try to push myself in front and show myself and all that. Because this thing taught me that it is his plan and his will, and he knows where you are and when he has to talk to you. So no matter how much you try to show your face, if he doesn't want to talk to you, he will not. No matter how far behind you are, if he wants to, he will. So it kind of taught me that lesson, and I stopped
to develop that inner connection with Swami, which is more important.
Exactly.
I mean, instead of trying to work out a strategy in the outward sense, what is very important is to have an inner sadhana than an outer strategy.
Absolutely. And I think it's a learning curve. First you strategize, then you think you can catch his attention, yes. Then you try various things. I saw that with a lot of our student brothers also.
Sometimes you will be seemingly successful also.
Successful, yeah. and it is probably with a plan. Swami does that because, see, when students try to develop their skills so that they can impress Swami, mm-hmm. the important thing there is that they are trying to do something for God.
Yes, they're developing that love for God.
So the term that Lord Krishna uses in the Gita, saying Sarva Karma Bhagavat Prityartham, that is what it is. And Swami lets you do that more and more. Because the more you are doing it for Him,
yes.
the better you become, and the more yes. the cleaner your yes. act becomes. So automatically it's a learning curve. There's no yes. doubt about it. At the same time, He doesn't expect you to sit back and everything is Swami's will and you not do anything. So He doesn't want you to be lazy also. So there are some people who use philosophy for convenience, and that is a wrong way to look at it. Do your stuff and you will know when to take it.
The 90th year of Bhagwan Baba's Divine Advent is here. What are you planning to offer at His lotus feet? How about a gift wrapped in red? If you wish to partner with the Sai Healthcare to save a precious life, please take the time to donate blood at the Sri Sathya Sai Super Specialty Hospital whenever you are visiting Puttaparthi. The blood bank is open Monday through Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Every single day, patients undergo life-saving procedures here, and a pint of blood can make all the difference. Let's build a favorable blood inventory. If you're a healthy adult, please donate. For more information, please visit psg.sssihms.org.in. Blood, it's in you to give. Please donate. Sai Ram.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
हे विश्वनाथ हे गौरीनाथ हे साईनाथ भगवान
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 दया करो
Well, I
विश्वनाथ हे गौरीनाथ हे साईनाथ भगवान। रामचंद्र रघुवीर रामचंद्र
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai's Thursday Live.